Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you on a Wednesday afternoon. We hope you are all having a wonderful Wednesday. Yet another beautiful, sunny day in our fair city. Willie Donick is live in Montreal, Canada. Predators at Canadiens tomorrow. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5, right here on 102.5. The Game. Derek, you came in here, by the way, quickly. You came in here and said you wanted to thank Haley.
Yes, I want
to
thank Haley.
The
Buzz.
For doing something that I didn't think you needed.
Yeah, well, I want to thank Haley because she supplied me with a hair tie, which I didn't scream out, hey, anyone has a hair tie? I didn't scream that out. Why? Because I don't have any hair. What I screamed out was, hey, does anybody have a rubber band? And Haley was like, hey, how about a hair tie? I said, absolutely, I take it. Went to her office. She gave me the hair tie. She said, this is what I keep hair ties for. Now, she has hair, lots of it. You know, me on the other hand, I don't. Even if I had a lot of hair, I wouldn't ask for a hair tie because I don't like man buns. That's just me. And maybe I'm jealous because I don't have any hair. But I just don't like them.
I don't know if you know this, Derek, but you don't have hair.
Yes.
I don't have hair.
Yeah.
Willie doesn't have hair.
Absolutely.
And David doesn't have
hair. We're the hellish crew.
We're the bald squad.
Yeah. Nick, get out of here. Nick got hair.
Nobody with hair is allowed to be involved in this program whatsoever.
Exactly.
Whatsoever. And I just want to say this quickly. If you have had the privilege of traveling to cover the NHL, as I did at one point in my life, and as Willie does now, it is an absolute privilege, to borrow that word again, to use that word again, to visit Montreal and to have a day off in Montreal, which Willie has, and he's spending it here with us.
Wow, Willie?
So thank you, Willie Donick. I also just want to say, because Silly Underdog Picks is coming up at 5:20, Hal Gill, of course, also in Montreal. I'd be willing to place a bet that Hal Gill does not answer the phone the first couple of times we call.
No,
because
think,
Hal Gill knows a thing or two about having fun in Montreal, as Willie can attest.
I think he will. I think he'll be on his P's and Q's.
Mm-mm. Willie,
he's gonna be on P's and Q's.
It's questionable.
Hey, I'm Team Hal. He's going to be there. He's going to answer his phone.
Okay.
Well, we'll see in a couple of hours. Silly Underdog Picks coming up at 5:20. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow at 5 o'clock. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head football coach, will join us for 4:00 as Vanderbilt returns to action. The Commodores had the off week last week. They host LSU on Saturday, an 11 a.m. kickoff at First Bank Stadium, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll talk about that and catch up with Clark Lee coming up in about an hour. So, as we all know, the history of young, highly touted quarterbacks in the NFL is littered with failure. One stat you have surely seen over the past couple of days after the Titans fired Brian Callahan: 6 of the past 8 quarterbacks drafted number 1 overall have had their coaches fired during their rookie seasons, including each of the past 4. It is incredibly difficult to develop and nurture a young quarterback. That's why there are only so many elite quarterbacks in the NFL at any given time. And I know that there are a ton of Titans fans who are freaked out that Cam Ward is going to be yet another highly touted quarterback who fails. And a big portion of that, a large portion of that, has to do with the environment that the quarterback is reared in. And we're going to talk about a couple of these stories today. It's one of my favorite type of sports stories. It's called the Now They Tell Us story. That is a term coined by Brian Curtis, who works for The Ringer. When a team fires a coach, when a team with high expectations misses the playoffs, within a couple of days, there's this huge story about everything that went wrong leading up to the firing or the disappointing season. And all of the people who wouldn't speak on the record or on background will finally speak about what's been going wrong. And we're going to talk about a couple of those stories today, because there have been some serious "now they tell us" stories about the Tennessee Titans over the past couple of days. But the first one that dropped came courtesy of Michael Silver of The Athletic with this headline. And I love this headline, guys. Cam Ward got dropped into the Titans' den of dysfunction. Can he make it out? Now that is a headline. Cam Ward got dropped into the Titans' den of dysfunction. Can he make it out? And Willie, you brought this article to our attention, and there was a quote in here. By the way, Michael Silver came to Nashville to do this story last week. So it was before the Titans lost to the Raiders and before the Titans fired Brian Callahan. But there is a quote in this story from a Raiders coach. Quote, "That," meaning the Titans, "might be the worst team I've seen in the last 25 years. They don't have any difference makers other than Jeffrey Simmons, and the whole thing was a total mess." Just a total mess. So let's attempt to answer the question that Michael Silver's headline poses. Cam Ward, Willie, got dropped into the Titans' den of dysfunction. How concerned are we that he can make it out?
I think this article illustrates what the perception is from afar and how it's already been moving in this direction, and it now has hit a whole new level. I'm always curious, not that it's the end-all, be-all, but I do think when you are getting a reputation, the longer you get labeled, and I'd be curious to know D-Mace's perspective on this, because D-Mace has been a free agent. He's been a guy that looks for a new team from time to time. You know, he played the vast majority of his career for two different teams, but he did change teams a couple other times. I wonder how much the reputation of the franchise that you're looking at comes into play, because right now the Titans, I think, have slipped to a new low with that. And if they're going to do another search, I wonder how it's going to affect the level of candidacy that they're going to get from that, because this article, I think, uncovers a lot of things internally about what has been going on. And really, I'm talking about from the top. And Mike Bargonzi has just worked himself into this family. But I think there's just a lot of questions from the top down of how they run things.
Yeah, I mean, to say that what has been going on lately with the Titans will not affect them in, you know, their replacement for head coach, or say, you know, high priced or, you know, free agents wanting to come here looking to win. You haven't helped yourself in that department when it comes to that. This team isn't good. And outside, like, listen, I think there are coaches that will take this job if McCoy doesn't prove that he's worthy of it. And I hope he does. I really hope he does, because that's a plus for Cam. Cam wouldn't have to then change the offense wouldn't change with another coach. It would stay the same under McCoy. So, and he would have at least 11 games, barring injuries, 11 games to sort of them to get used to one another. So I hope it does work out for McCoy, because if it does, that's better for your quarterback. But if it doesn't, I think those hot coaches that will be getting jobs this summer, well, this fall, spring, they may not be looking at the Titans as a job that I really want to take, just because of the dysfunction that has been going on, or seems to have gone on or be going on with upper management. I understand there are only 32 of these jobs, and if you got an opportunity to take one, you more than likely you take one. But every job ain't a good job. Ben Johnson showed y'all that last year when he took his name out of the hat. Now, it could have been other reasons, but he took his name out of the hat. And he seems to have found the right job now there in Chicago, because Caleb Williams looked much better than he has his first two seasons under the last coaching staff. So whereas every job is desirable because it's a head coaching job, but every job ain't the right job. So if they don't get this thing seem to be going in the right direction, because the roster doesn't look good if I'm a new coach coming in and I want to, you know, get in here and stake my claim as a head coach, well, I got to have some security in staking my claim as a head coach, because you're not going to do to me what you've done to the last coaches and GMs, because this team is not good, and it's going to take a while for that to reverse what is going on right now.
Let's just be honest with ourselves. I hear what you're saying, Derek. You hope that it works out for Mike McCoy, because we know that young quarterbacks need consistency. They need continuity on the coaching staff. But let's be real. What are the actual chances that Mike McCoy is going to be a member of this organization past the season? I know that Mike Mularkey took over for Ken Whisenhunt, and Mike Mularkey was promoted from interim head coach to actual head coach. I don't know what the success rate of interim coaches becoming head coaches is. Antonio Pierce, that was recently, right? Antonio Pierce took over for the Raiders and ended up getting the full-time job, but then he was right out the door. So I hear what you're saying. Like, I'm not even thinking about that. I think unless the Titans engineer a significant turnaround, Mike McCoy is gone. Mike McCoy is a placeholder.
I think best case scenario for this team, and damn what everybody else says, and I'm sure there will be some good candidates out there. The best thing for this team is for Mike McCoy to show that he can coach and develop this quarterback. He has 11 games to do it. He's had time with him already. I don't know how much time. They haven't said how involved he was with, you know, Cam's development and the offense and everything else. They hadn't said anything about that. I know he's spoken to players. I know he's been, you know, he's made, you know, relationships and built relationships with some of these players. But he has an 11-game trial to show that this quarterback is not doing the same things that he was doing under Brian Callahan. If you show that, Mike McCoy, you are at the top of the list, and I want you to be at the top of the list. I don't care who else is out there. If it ain't Tomlin, if it ain't John Harbaugh, I don't give a damn about nobody else, because those two guys have proven to me they can win championships and they can be culture changers. I want somebody to change this locker room, and if Mike McCoy comes in here and it seems like he's doing it and developing this quarterback, damn it, that's all I care about. Get the winning team. So I hope he does do a good job. Again, it doesn't have to be a playoff run. It doesn't have to, you know, win 8 or 9 of the last 11. No, it would be great if that happened, and I know the fans would like it. Well, some fans may not, because they would be thinking, well, we want a whole new coach, period. But that would be the best thing, and I mean the best thing for this organization, and if Mike McCoy comes in here and show that he has what it takes to be a head coach of this team, don't give a damn about anything else. If he can prove that, we're good. And you're still gonna have a high pick.
You have an opportunity that all the other candidates don't, and that's that you have the reins until you don't. But can we take a moment and just absorb the fact that it's a Raiders coach? That might be the worst team I've seen in the last 25 years. The
His
Raiders
team was
have
bad.
Had a pretty bad team.
Exactly.
Over the last 25 years. I mean, a lot of them. They reek of dysfunction. And speaking of the Raiders, they fired their coach a couple years ago, put in an interim coach, and hired the interim coach, only to fire him after 1 year. So they should know what dysfunction looks like. And now they've turned over a new leaf. They've got Pete Carroll. I don't know if he's a long-term guy at this stage of his career, but, you know, they're not used to beating teams easily. And they just beat the Titans easy, so I can see why that coach on that staff. I don't know how long he's been there, but probably thinks the Titans aren't very good. But I agree with you, Derek. I still cling to the continuity. What's best for Cam Ward? That needs to be the number one question here, as he tries to slog through the fire. And so, if you can show progress, Mike McCoy now just gets flipped for Brian Callahan. He gets a shot at it because a tie should go to not blowing the whole thing up. But we've got a long way to go before we get to that.
I will say, and I don't know how much this actually matters. Mm-hmm. It probably doesn't matter at all. But Mike McCoy looks and sounds like a football coach. He's been in the league coaching for what? More than 20 years in different capacities. Of course, he was a head coach for the Chargers about a decade ago for what? 4 seasons. So he has head coaching experience. He's been around. He's been a quarterback's coach, an offensive coordinator, all of those things. He just looks and sounds like a football coach. It when I heard him at his news conference yesterday, you know, Brian Callahan represents the new school of football coaches, the offensive whizzes, you know, I can't think of the best way to describe it. But Mike McCoy, he's got that old school feel to him, which I know, Derek, is something that you pointed out as well, as a positive for Mike McCoy.
Yeah, he's just, I think he, because he's been a head coach, and he's had some good one. He had a good season or two, and he had a not so good season or two with the San Diego Chargers, then the San Diego Chargers. So he's been through the ups and he's been through the downs. Then he went off and took a hiatus and he became, you know, coordinators and all this other stuff. I think he has learned from his experience how to best do it the second go around. And sometimes that's the way it happens. Like the second go around, then you figure out how to do it and what's the best way to go about it. He's learned, he's watched, he's observed, and now he's in a position to take over for Brian. And y'all got to understand, I remember us talking about this when he was hired, McCoy. And I said, well, they brought in another guy to have another offensive mind. And if this doesn't work, he was a head coach before, so they can just seamlessly go from Callahan to McCoy. A part of me believe McCoy was brought in because they knew more than likely Brian Callahan wasn't going to get the job done. So they need.
Then why keep Brian Callahan?
No. It's not about the why, because they were going to keep him, give him an opportunity. They were gonna practice patience, like they say it.
We'll talk more about that.
We'll talk about that. But it's just it's real. It's a coincidence. Like I look at stuff like that and I say that didn't just happen by happenstance. McCoy comes in when they already had about 20. Didn't we talk about even before the firing? There's too many cooks in the kitchen. They already had a bunch of cooks in the kitchen. So you want to add another cook in the kitchen? One with more stars than the actual cook. So you're bringing in a guy that just started a restaurant. You're going to bring in a Michelin star guy to kind of be in the background for the guy that don't even have a Michelin star, just starting up his restaurant. So that's what you did. And you're not supposed to think that me, the conspiracy theorist over here, you don't think that I'm not going to think, why are y'all bringing him in? What? I mean, you don't need another voice on offense, do you? Oh, he's had head coaching experience. And he's had some success. Oh, okay. So when y'all fire Callahan during the season, I thought it was going to be in the middle of the season. When y'all fire him during the season, he can just seamlessly go in and take over, and that's that. You got a coach that can lead your team that has been a head coach. Man, that is just a coincidence. I don't think it was a coincidence. I really don't.
Well, I don't see a tinfoil hat on your head, but that could change in the next couple of minutes. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Can Cam Ward survive the Titans' den of dysfunction? As I say that, I feel like there should be like a green screen with flames behind me or something like that. We don't have that technology, but maybe we can find it in the next couple of minutes. Can Cam Ward survive the Titans' den of dysfunction, as the headline in The Athletic says, on a great story by Michael Silver. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Willie, I'm giving you fair warning. This is a trigger warning for Willie Donick. We're going to play something coming back from break that might upset Willie Donick, and I'm going to give him a couple of minutes to prepare.
Please don't yell at me.
I'm not. Well, don't yell at David.
That's mostly at Willie.
Yeah, don't yell at David. You can yell at me. It's all me. 615-737-1025. This Friday from noon to 3, Chase and Big Joe will be broadcasting live from Boston Commons in East Nashville, and we'll have some Predators tickets to give away. It's going to be an action-packed sports weekend in Nashville, topped by Mike Vrabel and the Patriots coming to town. So start your weekend off right and hang with Chase and Big Joe this Friday at Boston Commons in East Nashville.
But those conversations, those offers, we did our due diligence, and ultimately we just felt like Cam is a player that we weren't going to let go anywhere else except here to Tennessee. So we arrived at that consensus. It took a lot of work to get there, and I don't think at any point since we made that decision there's really wasn't any conversations past that. You know, I said it before that I think when you have an opportunity to add a caliber of quarterback like Cam, those things are priceless. There's no price you put on that from draft capital standpoint, because those players end up being what you think they're capable of. Those picks don't matter when it comes to, you know, future picks and draft capital, because he's got the ability to be a really fantastic quarterback.
Are you feeling triggered, Willie?
I can't even believe that. I still am amazed. You guys know how I reacted to that the day after the draft, or I guess it was the same day that they had that press conference, or maybe they had it the night
that was the night of the draft after the Titans picked Cam Ward. So your triggering was the next day on the air. But
yes. So I'm still triggered. And look, I said this that day. What was the date of the draft? April 28th or 29th, something like that?
Thereabouts.
Whatever that next day was, I believe I said this then, and I'm going to say it again now. I didn't want to be right on this, but it is such an illustration of the dysfunction of the top, the decision-making process about the draft. You had your head coach who was on the heels just a couple of months before that of a long discussion of, are we keeping him or are we not keeping him? Yeah, well, we'll keep him, but he's got to improve. He's a young head coach. We want to see growth. And it was kind of like, or else, right? There was a Burke Nyhill quote. And Burke Nyhill is not a football guy, but he's certainly in this process about how these decisions get made, the discussions with the owner. And, of course, the owner is the one that makes that final decision. They always come back to that, even though she never talks about her perspective or anything like that, and nobody really talks about the process. I don't know if they want to talk about the process, because it is messed up. Because through this process, you had this, well, the coach will keep him, but he better get better. He's young. He's got to show improvement. Yet, after that, that coach goes through the process and has a big say in evaluating and selecting Cam Ward, to the point where he's saying, I don't even care what the trade compensation was. We got our guy. Now, how crazy does that look right now after you turned on that coach 6 weeks into the season? And now knowing, now you tell me this, guys, if you called the Giants right now and said, hey, guys, you know, we were just reconsidering things. You know that trade you guys offered us right before the draft? Can we get that package right now? We'll trade you Cam Ward. You trade us Abdul Carter and the other picks that you were going to, next year's first rounder, next year's second rounder. We'll take whoever you picked. Do you think the Giants would even answer the phone? They'd hang up on you. But that's what they turned down. And who was at the center of that decision? Brian Callahan, who you didn't even think was that good of a coach. You fired him after 6 weeks. That just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, whether, you know, Brian had a lot of say or little say, he still was in the process of looking for their, you know, franchise quarterback. And this team thought highly of Cam Ward, that they said, you know what, Giants, thank you, but no thank you. We're going to take our quarterback, and we're going to build around him. So whether that was the right thing or not, who knows? I mean, maybe we'll find out in 2 or 3 years and kind of go from there. But you're right from the standpoint of, okay, when you drafted Cam Ward, in your mind, what was it going to look like for you to fire him? And what it looks like, do you think it more than likely was going to happen or not, based on your roster? I would tend to think they thought it was going to happen, meaning they weren't going to be a good team. So I go back to when you said development, when you said this team needs to show development, you didn't tell us what that looked like. You didn't. You kept it vague, very vague. You didn't tell us what developing looks like outside of the quarterback. You didn't give a win total. You didn't get anything. Why? Because you wanted to make your own determination, and you have every right to. You wanted to make your own determination on what developing looked like, or is this team better? Because, again, they got better in certain areas, but they're just a bad team. We know that. So you drafted a quarterback knowing good well, more than likely, there was a 90-something percent chance. I'm not going to say it was 99% or 100, but there was a 90% chance somewhere in there or close to it that he was not going to be your coach once the season ended or in the midst of the season, but you still chose to draft this quarterback. I think this was all the front office. This had nothing to do with Brian Callahan. They made him think he had a lot to say, and he probably did as far as what he thought about Cam, the player. He evaluated him. But I think, and I believe, that they made the decision to draft Cam Ward. And they knew that, hey, listen, more than likely, this guy's going to be gone. We're going to be looking for our next coach to develop our quarterback. So I'm not going to put this on Brian Callahan. I'm not going to say, or the organization, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, why did they draft Cam knowing they were? Well, they knew it because they wanted to. Because they wanted to give him a little chance. Had they not signed, had they had given away the picks and not got a quarterback, who you think would be the quarterback for this team? As matter of fact, do you think that quarterback could have helped this team? So his ass would have been fired regardless.
Maybe so, but here is the other part of this. Remember the press release when they fired Mike Vrabel?
Mm-hmm.
We have an exciting young quarterback. They were talking about Will Levis. And they hired Brian Callahan thinking, remember, they sort of put it out there before they even interviewed candidates. We've got this great young quarterback. Who's going to be the coach that's going to be the best, and as they put it, or Amy Adams, it was her statement, right? We've got this exciting young roster, which has proven to be completely way off base, and including this great young quarterback who we know where he is right now. But, like, they were selling this bill of goods, mm-hmm, of Callahan's going to be the guy that brings out Levis, and that didn't go well. And yet he still had a big say in picking up the next guy, in Cam Ward, when they ignored all the process that would have been. I can't act like I know that. I'm not a GM. I'm not a guy who builds franchises. But it just seems to me all of this evidence. We had jokes about the Pulitzer Prize winning guy that wrote, mm-hmm, the article about how you study building the draft. They had the assets. It's what John Robinson did. It's what, when they were last at this low point, it's what John Robinson did. Flip the number one pick to get the assets. But they kept chasing this, and they did it and they clearly misevaluated what they were looking for in that process. Who makes the decisions? And I think that is what is at the center of all this. And can they get it right? There's so many things coming out in these articles with the internal way that the top works that raise a lot of questions. And it's questions we've had for a long time.
We know that when terrible teams draft quarterbacks, it turns those teams into pressure cookers, because the mere presence of that quarterback supercharges expectations. Even if we all know that a turnaround isn't likely right away. And I remember this quote from Peyton Manning, one of these stories that we referenced and discussed leading into the season about why young quarterbacks bust so often. And Peyton Manning to The Athletic said, quote, "It's like a young couple thinking about bringing a baby into the world. If you're not sure you're ready, just don't do it." But these teams can't help themselves because these teams believe that the quickest path to fixing what ails them is drafting a quarterback.
It is.
And, well, the problem is, as we have mentioned multiple times, six of the past eight quarterbacks drafted number one overall have had their head coaches fired in their rookie seasons. So clearly these teams do not have patience, and I can't study all of the rosters of these teams immediately, but I have to imagine most of them were not in a position to allow a young quarterback to thrive.
I understand that part, but I think what we have to wrap our heads around is that organizations are not going to wait to draft a quarterback. That's why we got done. So as much as, you know, Peyton Manning says this, and he's probably, and he's right in theory, but no matter how much he says it, organizations, I don't care what's going on with their coach, they're not going to pass up a guy who they believe is an elite quarterback that can lead their franchise to a Super Bowl. You will be a damn idiot to do that. The head coach is disposable. That guy I draft number one isn't. If I believe he's the guy, I'm drafting him, and you're disposable. You're out of here next year. Because the track record says, at least it's starting to say with those guys, Caleb Williams looked better. Bryce Young looked better with a new coach. So that's all these GMs are looking at it. As long as we get that guy right there in place, as long as we get a house, we can work around the yard and everything else, but we got to get the house first. We got to get the foundation and everything first. We can work the yard later. That's how some of these GMs, some of these owners feel, because they know these guys, it's an arms race. These guys do not, whether they misevaluate them, I don't know. But when they believe they have one, they don't care who's coaching them at the minute. They want to make sure they get him first. Let's get him first. And then we could, this guy right here, oh, I could pay him $4 or $5 million for the next 2 or 3 years. He's going to get another job. But I need to get that guy first.
But isn't that short-sighted thinking?
It's not short-sighted thinking. It's not. If this coach, Brian Callahan, prime example, his first year, you knew this roster was bad. Will Levis, it didn't work out. Maybe Will Levis go somewhere else and be a good quarterback on another team. That can't happen. But in his first season, you saw this didn't work out. Okay? You saw that, okay, it's not going well. You're going to give him another opportunity and evaluate. I don't care how anybody else, and I will say this forever, I don't care what the other 31 teams did or how they evaluated him. The Titans evaluated him as a number one pick. So with that being the case, Brian, I know we're going to give him an opportunity to do this again. But we ain't passing the quarterback, because we know if he doesn't get it right, what game is it? 5? We're going to fire him. And we're going to bring in somebody else prematurely, like beforehand, that can seamlessly float into this job. So organizations don't wait to take elite quarterbacks. Whoever told you that, they don't know what they're talking about. You know, why would I wait just because I got a bad call? Why would I wait to take a Peyton Manning? Why would I wait to take a John Elway?
Well, I think it's different, quickly. I think it's different when that quarterback is the, I know this is a banned word on this program, but I'm going to do it anyway. When that quarterback is a generational talent, when it's Joe Burrow or Andrew Luck versus Cam Ward.
It doesn't matter if you, the organization, that's what, just understand that part. If you, the Tennessee Titans, Indianapolis coach, whoever, you got the number one pick, and you think that guy, no matter what anybody else evaluates him as, you think that guy is your quarterback at number one, take him.
615-737-1025. We will get to your reaction. You can join us at 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. D-Mace Vangan Adonic is presented to you by Bax Homeworks, which transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Get a free estimate now at BAXHomeworks.com.
Last one. Mike, what's the biggest areas of improvement in your eyes for Cam now that you've seen him through a six-game sample size?
Well, it's like we talked about the other day. It's going to be every week he's going to learn something new. And it's going to be a rookie quarterback. It's tough. There's no doubt about it. It's the hardest position to play. And I've told him a number of times in the last couple of days that I've seen him, it's just keep plugging along. It's just one day at a time. Keep getting better. Cam has a burning desire to be great. A burning desire to be great. And the key thing I always tell him, just trust the system. And go out there and be you. Have fun. Be Cam.
All right. Thanks, Coach. Thank you, Mike.
Right. Thank you. Cam's up
next. That was Mike McCoy yesterday in his first news conference discussing Cam Ward. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. And I am interested in seeing how McCoy attempts to answer a question he asked rhetorically, I guess you could say, yesterday. How do we get Cam to be more efficient and have more success? And what interests me about McCoy's background is that he has experience with many different styles of quarterbacks in his long coaching career. Peyton Manning, Philip Rivers, Tim Tebow. Remember when Tim Tebow was the hottest thing going in the NFL? Mm-hmm. Mike McCoy was the Broncos' offensive coordinator during Tim Tebow's, was it Tebow Mania? Is that what it was called? I was about to call it Lynn's Sanity. That's something completely different. But during Tebow Mania, Mike McCoy was the offensive coordinator for the Denver Broncos. So he has a ton of experience with many different styles of quarterbacks. So I am curious, Willie, to see, because look, Cam Ward, realistically, is in a bit of a holding pattern for the next few months because, as I said, it's unlikely that Mike McCoy sticks around past this season, filling in for Brian Callahan. So at the same time, the Titans still have to play 11 games. So I want to see what Mike McCoy, and Bo Hardegree is going to continue to call the plays, but I am wondering what Mike McCoy does to answer that question he said yesterday. How do we get Cam to be more efficient and have more success?
You know, I give this some thought too as well, because one of the things, you sent an article from CBS Sports, from I think it's Jonathan Jones that wrote it. It's
yes.
Very well done. Another one that kind of opens up the lid under the hood and gets a lot of people to comment, a lot of it on name sources. But, you know, sometimes, Adam, you could comment on this from a journalistic side. Sometimes you get more honest stuff when it's off the record. And there was a lot of, hey, we thought we were getting a head coach, but they really, maybe the mistake in hindsight was getting all caught up in, we need the offensive-minded offensive coordinator head coach. When really the first job of a head coach is to be that, a head coach, a guy that gets everybody on the same page, gets everybody moving in the same direction. That is huge. And I'm curious about something that Trevor Maddich said yesterday. Mike McCoy was a very young head coach when he took over the Chargers. He was, I think, 40, 41 years old. Now he's got a little more wisdom. He's 53. Maybe he's got a better handle on how to be a head coach. And he did have a couple of decent years, right? He had a couple of winning seasons with the Chargers. So that's not nothing. So I think, Demas, you tell me if you think I'm wrong. I think the first order of business is to get everybody on the same page. Get something that everybody believes in. That we're not having these discussions about, well, practice was really bad on Thursday, or, you know, something went wrong functionally during the game on Sunday. Like, they need to get everybody pulling the rope in the same direction. And that's where Mike McCoy starts. I would start with that before I got into, well, what's the offense we're running and all that stuff.
Well, there should be a big improvement because, like you said, you're dealing with someone that has been in this position before. Again, you can watch somebody be in a position. You can learn under them. But until you have that actual job, you don't know really what it's like. And then you hire him not only to do that, but to be your play caller. That was mistake number one. If you just wanted to hire him as a play caller, cool. Because, I mean, listen, it would have been his first actual job, you know, first actual time at calling plays during the game. Like, they were his plays that he was calling. But he didn't even do that. And he wasn't a head coach, but you decided to hire him because that's the end thing to do. Hire a young, offensive-minded guy that everybody speaks highly of, that has tentacles that attach to, you know, very important people in this sport. And you hire him based upon that and, you know, how intelligent he sounds in the meeting instead of going with someone that has a proven track record of being in that position before, that has had some success in that position. And I'm not saying that every time, you know, it works because he's had some, you know, experience at it, but at least when the stuff started to hit the fan, you know how to react and you know what to expect because you've been in this position before. And more than likely, you're going through the same thing that Brian Callahan went through because you got fired. So you understand it. That's why bringing McCoy in, I think it's a good thing. And you're right, Willie. Beside all the X's and O's, he needs to change it as fast as he can, but in a way that it doesn't just disrupt everything. He has to change whatever that was going on inside that locker room on that team, because whatever was happening, it didn't foster winning football. I'm not saying that the guys lost faith in Callahan or the guys just wasn't, you know, they were doing their own things. But whatever was going on in that locker room, it didn't foster a winning environment. It just didn't. They didn't win. So hopefully McCoy, first of all, before the even X, I'm not even worried about the X's and O's. I'm really not. First, he has to get this team whole again as quickly as he possibly can. I think the play stuff will work itself out because, listen, they can't improve from a play standpoint no more than any other team in their situation, meaning the depletion of the roster, meaning they don't have enough top-end guys. So he can only, it's only going to look so much different. It's not gonna go from 0 to 85. It may go from 0 to about 25, 30, but that's an improvement. I think that's what you get out of the play. But when you're talking about, I want to see him slowly but as quickly as possible change the environment around there.
Let's go to Dave on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Dave, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks. My question is for Mace, really. I have a quarterback question. My view comes from the couch, so it's very limited. But a rookie quarterback, you know, I always hear, well, they're going to see things they've never seen before. Well, I think that sounds crazy. I think, is it not more that they're going to see things that much better athletes and much more speed that they to see if they can make decisions with a new environment, not just new defenses? And that's my question.
Thanks. Thank you for the call, Dave.
Thank you for the call, Dave. I think you have a point because nowadays – because there are coaches that are coming from the NFL to the college ranks. And what they're doing is bringing – look at what doing it with the Ohio State Buckeyes. What's his name? Matt Patricia. What he's doing is he's bringing his defensive schemes from the NFL and he's bringing it to college football. So now you're going to start seeing more of what you see in the NFL. The problem is, like the caller said, it's the speed of it. It's the speed for which it comes. You know, there's one thing to chase somebody down or try to guard somebody that's running a 4.8, and you maybe see a 4.3 every once in a while. But when you see that 4.3 all the time, and it's spread across a bunch of players, and that defense, they're good at disguising it so much so that you really don't see it until the last minute. Again, it's not that they've never seen it, because they probably have seen a lot, these quarterbacks. There may be a few things they haven't seen technically, but it's the speed that is coming to them. It's not that they've never seen it. They just don't know how to process it because it's coming so fast. That's why, and McCoy said this, right now things are so fast for Cam right now. We're trying to slow it up. He didn't say man, things are so confusing to him that he doesn't know this defense. That's, no, he just said things are coming too fast for him right now, and he needs to slow it down. That's what it's about, just slowing the process down. That's how Mike McCoy can help continue to help Cam Ward, to slow the process down for him. Because I'm going to tell you, and I promise you, majority of this stuff you've seen, Cam, majority of stuff that you're seeing, you've seen it before, but it just ain't come. It didn't come at you this fast.
Calvin Ridley did not practice today with the hamstring. I don't know if we're going to see him on Sunday, so that's not going to make Mike McCoy's job any easier. But two quick points from the press conference that I thought were noteworthy along these lines with McCoy. Like, what's going to be different? Mike Borgonzi didn't say much during the press conference, but when he did talk, he did say, I think things can be different with McCoy, with running practices, with leadership. He thinks, and I thought it was interesting, he was really trying not to say very much in a lot of the questions. And the other part, when Brinker was saying, he kept saying, we're not seeing growth, we're not seeing growth. He said that about 12 times. And somebody finally said, well, can you give me a little more detail? He said, hey, special teams has been a lot better, which is true. Defense, you know, he said, it's been okay. And he said, but then he basically said offense. They feel like offense can be better. So that 25% to 30%, D-Mace, is an interesting thing, because I agree the personnel is going to make it very tough. But can they see anything that looks better? I think that sort of sets the stage, because Brinker and Borgonzi seem to think McCoy can make a difference.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your thoughts on the Titans. They take on Mike Vrabel and the Patriots at Nissan Stadium on Sunday. We will get to Mike Vrabel at some point this week. Other things have been going on. But coming up next, Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee will join us. The Commodores are also back in action this weekend, hosting LSU. We will catch up with Clark coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.